Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Where the Road Bends by Rachel Fordham. Narrated by Colleen Marlowe. You pierce my soul. I am half agony, half hope. I have loved none but you. Jane Austen, Persuasion. 1. Blackwell, Iowa, 1880. The small band on her ring finger glistened in the sunlight as Nora King walked the family land she had nearly lost. This land, her father had said before he died, was their legacy. It was the backdrop of their story, their wrestle and toil, and their love. She lifted her hand in front of her and sighed. She'd told Jake she didn't need a ring, but he wouldn't have it any other way, claiming that his bride would be up on all the latest fashions. In 2 weeks' time, she would be married, and the thought made her heart beat unevenly. But there was no turning back, no other way. He'd come courting the very week the banker had threatened to call in her loan. Jake had come to rescue her, and she would be thankful. Nora Granger, she said. It sounded strange to her ears, but with time, she assured herself, it would become who she was. Jake wasn't the romantic suitor she'd pictured marrying, but now, at 22 years old and short on money, she was willing to let her former idealistic notions go. Jake was an able-bodied man, and though older than she was, he was willing to rescue her in her time of need. That counted for something. That was enough, was it not? Nora stopped walking when she reached the creek that ran through her land and couldn't help but smile when she heard its familiar burbling. A bench her father had gifted her on her 10th birthday beckoned her to enjoy a moment's respite. The gentle rolling of the creek memorized her as it had always done, soothing the restlessness inside her. She removed her boots and stockings and gathered her skirts in her hands. Jake had agreed to live on this land when they married. Her family deed would soon be in his name. But this creek and this bench would always be hers. Her spine stiffened. Jake wouldn't care that she found the water delightful and sloshed around in it, would he? She laughed. What a ridiculous fear. Jake farmed. Surely he appreciated and enjoyed the land and water. He wouldn't fault her for wanting to cool her feet in the summer heat. Besides, she would work long hours to make up for any time lost. Shirking was not in her nature. She'd show him that. She waded deeper into the water, letting the delicious freshness lap against her calves. And for one blissful moment, she had no worries. Gone were her money troubles, her marriage fears, and her loneliness, washed away with the current. Two vultures circling not far off caught her eye. Around and around they went, swooping lower with each loop, readying no doubt to land by some poor creature that had lost its life to the elements. Their circling motions interrupted her calm. Her heart beat faster and worry crept in, causing her to drop her skirts and run toward the birds and what they had found. She rushed from the creek as quick as a fox from a henhouse. Her hogs and cattle were profit animals. She couldn't lose them. Her finances were already precarious. Her land was prime, that was true, but a loan came with it. Evidence of the years she'd struggled to farm on her own while wading through the unfamiliar waters of grief. Her bare feet and wet hem tried to slow her advance on the circling birds, but she refused to be hindered. She pushed hard and fast, her feet crying out when they landed on a rock, but still she pressed on, unwilling to slow her pace. Her focus jumped from the yellow plants around her to the carnivores above. What did they see? To her right, a small herd of cattle grazed, unaffected by the birds above them. Nothing seemed amiss, so she slowed her pace. Perhaps she had been too rash with her worry. Clinging to that thought, she nearly laughed. Her nerves had her frantic, but all was well. Nora raised a hand to her brow, blocking the sun, and sighed as she admired her endless fields dancing to the rhythm of the wind. Ignoring the birds above, she turned back toward the creek in her abandoned shoes. Two steps were all she took before stopping again. A patch of crushed wheat and a trail of red. Her fear returned. Something was hurt or dead. She forced her breath to come slow and quiet as she followed the path of blood. Her hands shook, and she forced them into fists. This was her farm. Until Jake moved onto it, she had to take care of the animals and keep them safe from predators. The amount of blood increased as she went on. She braced herself to see a mauled animal, a sight she was certain would turn her stomach. The trail veered left, so she veered with it, and then froze. A head, full of matted hair. It was... her skin tingled. A man? She didn't understand. She had feared a cow or a hog, but had never once imagined the birds were circling above a man. Inhaling deeply and letting her breath out slowly, she forced herself to stay present despite wanting to run and hide and pretend the wretched image away. This man, whoever he was, needed her. There was no one else.
Sir?
He didn't move. Nora clung to her meager courage and knelt beside him. Her hand trembled as she reached toward him, only to pull back and clutch it to her chest. Death was not new to her. The cows and hogs and, of course, chickens were all butchered. But suddenly an image of her parents overpowered her. Her mother's sallow, sickly face before illness took her, and her father, bloodied and broken after he'd fallen from his favorite horse. She pressed her eyes closed and searched for strength and fortitude she wanted to believe she possessed, that she needed to possess in this moment.
Are you alive?
She forced her still weak hand to the man's chest and held her breath, focusing on him. A slight rise and fall.
You're alive!
She let the air out of her chest, instantly relieved and less afraid. His dark, shaggy hair lay matted against his scalp, and his face was badly swollen from bruises that gave him an all-over purple hue. His nose appeared badly broken. It did not take much imagination to believe that the rest of him was equally battered. It was difficult to know what this man would look like if he were in good health. He could be anyone. Perhaps he was even someone she'd seen before. Questions swirled in her mind, but she couldn't dwell on them, not when his heart beat so weakly. The vultures and hot afternoon sun were worrisome, as were his injuries. His survival, she feared, teetered on her ability to care for him. Nora stood on her bare feet and looked around, desperate for a solution. She feared leaving him, afraid the birds would grow daring enough to land and add their own injuries. If she could rouse him, maybe he could limp beside her back to the house. With uncharacteristic boldness, she lifted his arm, put it over her shoulder, and tried to pry him from the ground. He groaned, then fell limp again. Certain she could not carry him all the way to the house, she grabbed a rock from the ground and threw it toward the birds.
"Go away!" she shouted.
They mocked her and continued their circling. She could do little about the birds other than hurry, but she could be of some help in protecting the man against sun. She tore the wet hem of her skirt and pressed the damp fabric to his forehead.
"I'll come back,"
she said before running toward her house in a reckless sprint. It took her longer than she wanted to get home, hitch a horse and makeshift pallet, and get back to him. She kept her eye on the birds as she returned. Only one circled now. Was the other on the ground? Her stomach tightened and her hand went to the pistol in her bag.
"Come on," she urged the horse. "No lollygagging."
He snickered his resistance but increased his pace.
"He's just ahead," she said to the horse. "Faster."
Once she was close enough, the second bird came into view. Large and malicious, it stood near the injured stranger. She leapt from the horse, spread her arms wide, and growled at the large bird. It hopped a few feet back but didn't fly away. Nora pointed her pistol at the bird, pulled the trigger back, and fired. She missed, but the sound of the shot sent the bird soaring high into the air.
There was no time to gloat over her victory, so she shoved the gun back into the saddlebag and turned her attention to the desperate man. "Let him live," she whispered, before once again placing her hand on the man's chest. A steady thudding confirmed he was alive. His eyes popped open and his hand came up and grasped her own, making her recoil in fear. "Water," he said, before his hand fell and his swollen eyes closed. He said no more, but his words had struck their mark. A fierce determination burned inside her. No matter their difference in size or the distance they had to cross, she would get this man water and aid him however possible. Sweat ran down her forehead as she dragged his large, broken body to the pallet. Whenever she felt unequipped for the task, she shouted again at the worthless birds and told them they couldn't have him. "Go find another meal," she yelled when her muscles threatened to give up on her. She was strong thanks to years of plowing, hauling water, and chopping wood. But even with years of farm muscle on her small but sturdy frame, the task of moving this giant of a man was difficult. "I'm taking him home. You can't have him," she shouted to the sky. She stood near the man's head, put her hands under his shoulders, and pulled with all her might. Her muscles screamed in agony and her back ached, but she did not stop. Only when the man was secured on the pallet did she relax and acknowledge what a feat she'd accomplished. He was twice her size, if not more, and all muscle. She blushed and pushed the observation away. She certainly hadn't saved his life yet, but she'd saved him from the birds, and that alone brought a smile to her face. "Getting you back to the house will be bumpy," she said over her shoulder as she led the horse away from the field. "Once we're there, I'll clean you up and go for the doctor. You smell like a rotten carcass." She wiped her brow with the back of her hand. "I shouldn't say that. That's terribly rude, even if it is true." Being mindful of his situation, she chose instead to fill the air with lighthearted conversation. She occasionally glanced over her shoulder and tried to deduce what she could about the man. "Where are you from?" she asked, not truly expecting a response. "I've lived on this farm my whole life. If you were feeling better, you'd see how beautiful it is. The crops blow in the wind like a wave on the sea. I've never seen the sea, but I can imagine it. Can you?" He, of course, made no answer, but she pretended he did. His large stature led her to believe he had a deep voice, so she imagined he told her about the hue of the ocean and the sound it made when it crashed against the shore. "It must be beautiful," she said, while leading the horse around a rut. "But I don't believe it's more beautiful than Kingland." He didn't utter a sound, leaving her to wonder if he even heard her chatter. "We're 8 miles from town. Are you from our town? Or maybe you traveled from somewhere else? Azure Springs or another place to the east? I suppose you'll tell me when you're able." She rambled on and on, never slowing her pace or her talking. "Sometimes I imagine I'm young again and this farm is run by my father and my mother is inside the house. It was all so much easier when my father was alive." She bit her lip, frustrated that she'd led the conversation back to the dead. "We have cattle and hogs, and we grow wheat and corn." She sighed. "That's what we always had, and we did so well, except when my father gambled. Don't judge him too harshly. He still managed to keep this place going. With him gone, I'm the one who's failed this place. But Jake's going to fix everything." He'd blown into her life like the dust on the wind, seemingly small but capable of overtaking everything. "He's got to." She led the horse the rest of the way to the house in silence, mindful of her charge, but also deep in thought. So much had happened in such a short amount of time, she could hardly keep up. She looked back at the man on the pallet, another unexpected happening, and now he was going to be in her home under her care. She cringed, thinking how that would sound to the already less than cordial neighbors. Come what may, he was here and she would not leave him to the birds. Getting him inside the house was far from graceful, and she couldn't help but hope he didn't remember a moment of it. She dragged him by his arms, rolled him across the floor, and even attempted to push him by his feet. Several times she had to stop and catch her breath, but always went back to her task, refusing to forsake him. more pushing and pulling, and at last he was securely inside.
"You're a brute. Too big for your own good,"
she snapped at him when his head bumped into the wall. Remorse followed, and in a gentler voice she said,
"I will choose to believe you would help me if you could. Since you're not up for talking, I'm going to assume you are the victim of an atrocious crime and in desperate need of kindness."
She laughed at her own absurdity. "Whatever you are, you showed up on my land." Rather than attempt to lift him onto a bed, she pulled the mattress from her parents' room, laid it on the floor of the parlor, and rolled him onto it. Sweat ran in streams down her face when she at last had him settled. She groaned when she thought of all she still had to do today. Everything in her wanted to collapse, curl up, and sleep for hours. But animals needed feeding, her garden ought to be weeded, and her stomach hadn't been filled since daybreak. But first, she had to see to the stranger's wounds. A squeamish fear niggled its way into her mind, attempting to steal her resolve. Cleansing him would require her to see more of this man than she wanted to see. Perhaps if she went for the doctor, he'd not only see to any wounds, but also wash this poor man's stench away. Unsure what to do, she looked out the window at the sun, low in the sky. Fetching a doctor would take time, so she'd have to travel in the dark. She scowled, knowing her situation was less than ideal. But what options did she have? Leave him and ride into the night, or stay beside him and hope her mediocre doctoring skills would suffice? She felt ill-equipped to make such a decision. At last, she decided to first inspect his wounds and see how severe they appeared. At the very least, she knew how to feed a convalescing invalid. Nursing her sickly mother had given her plenty of experience. Still stalling, she offered the man water, only to have it run down his cheek. She put the water aside and braced herself for the inevitable. With fresh rags and soap in hand, she set to work cleaning the caked on mud and blood from his skin. The bruises could not be so easily washed away, but with time the swelling and color would dissipate. When she was bruised or scratched, her mama never fetched a doctor. Granted, this man had a great many more such injuries than she'd ever had, but they still did not seem so bad that a doctor needed to be summoned in the night. She took a deep breath, knowing his internal injuries could be worse than those on his purple face. His shirt was tattered. Rather than save it, she cut it off and washed his arms and chest.
"It's merely doctoring," she reassured herself when she felt her pulse jump with each stroke of the rag against his flesh.
Two gashes in his upper chest required bandaging, and when she touched his ribs, he jerked to the side.
Poor man. His ribs were so tender, likely broken or badly bruised.
Once finished with his upper body, she covered him with a sheet and stepped away to catch her breath and prepare herself for what she must do next. Many years ago, her mama ran out to help a field hand who'd been injured. He'd cut his leg awful bad, and she'd slit his trousers up to his thigh without even batting an eye and stitched him up like his leg was nothing more than a seam to be sewn. Just doctoring, Nora reminded herself before returning to her patient. Shoulders squared, she attempted to display the same body language she'd seen in her mama all those years before. With forced confidence, she cut his already torn trousers from his ankles up to his thighs and inspected him for injuries, though she tried to think of nothing but chores and how many hogs she ought to sell when the time came. She couldn't help but notice that this man was muscular and clearly worked hard for his daily bread.
"Who hurt you?"
she asked aloud, before tackling any more of the much-needed cleaning. He rolled his head toward her. She gasped and flung the sheet over his body before dashing a few steps away.
"You're injured. That's all this is. I was just trying to help."
Her words were true, but she still felt guilty for the skin she'd seen.
"Where?"
His voice was hoarse and uneven.
"You have some gashes on your head and a broken nose. I believe your ribs may be broken, and, well, you have bruises everywhere, though I haven't inspected all of you."
"Where?"
he tried to clear his throat.
"Where am I?"
"The King Farm, just outside of Blackwell, Iowa."
She swished her rag absently in her bowl of water, now darkened by the blood she'd washed from his skin. If you think you'll be all right while I'm gone, I can fetch a doctor. It would take some time, but I'd ride fast. I'd go for a neighbor to help, but, well, there's no one very close, and most wouldn't want to help. Or I don't think they would, but I could ask.
No, don't go.
He tried unsuccessfully to prop himself up.
Where am I?
Blackwell, Iowa. She said the name slowly, putting emphasis on each syllable. Perhaps she should check again for head injuries.
No.
His head rolled to the side as though it were too heavy to control.
I can't be in Iowa.
Unless everyone else I know has been lying to me for my entire life, then this is assuredly Blackwell, Iowa. He groaned. We're small, but we have a doctor. You needn't worry.
No doctor,
he said. With his right hand, he patted his chest.
Where's my shirt? Give me my clothes and I'll go.
Heat rushed up Nora's neck all the way to her ears. I cut your shirt and your pants. They were torn and I had to see if you were injured. I did not expect you to wake. I can only guess that getting you out of the sun has helped. She grabbed the soiled shirt and held it out to him. Here, but you won't be able to wear it. I'll get you clothes of my father's when you're ready to be on your way. His weak hands reached for the shirt before falling to his side.
Money. Was there money in my shirt? In my jacket?
Nora shook her head. You didn't have a jacket, and I didn't go through your pockets. She put a hand on his arm. Don't agitate yourself. I'm sure whatever is wrong can be set right. If you'll trust me, I'll help you. She looked away when she said it. So many things were impossible to set right, and she knew it. But she couldn't help but hope his problems could be resolved. I'll get you feeling better. Let me get your water. She reached for the cup she'd brought earlier, only to see it overturned. As she headed to the kitchen, away from him, the reality of her situation settled on her. He could be bad, she thought. She knew nothing about him, not even his name. Without getting his water, she darted back to the parlor. What's your name? His eyes had been closed, but he opened them when she spoke.
Quincy Barnes.
For no reason at all, she felt herself relax. Apparently, it was more comfortable being under the same roof with a man whose name she knew. Mr. Barnes, I'm Nora King.
Call me Quincy.
If you insist. She pivoted away from him. I'll fetch you your water now. When she returned, she sat on the floor beside Quincy and fidgeted, unsure what to do next. He drank a few sips and then fell asleep, shifting and moaning from pain. When he cried out or winced in his sleep, she put a hand to his shoulder and he settled. When he woke again, she propped him up long enough for him to drink more water and tried to comfort him with her words. Would it help to talk about whatever it was that brought you to my land? A crease formed between his dark brows.
I don't know how exactly I came to be here.
I told you all about my land and even about my problems. You may not have been awake for it all, but I did an awful lot of prattling as I struggled to get you under my roof. Seems fun to sit beside you and bring you water and soup and nurse you back to health. You ought to tell me about yourself. What if you're some awful villain and I don't know it? The corner of his mouth pulled upward, and her fidgeting hand stilled at the sight of it. With his injuries so fresh and plentiful, she didn't dare call him handsome. But there was something enticing about his faint smile that intrigued her.
If I were a villain, do you think I'd tell you?
You've a point. I suppose I'll have to heave you back outside and let the vultures have you. It's a shame, though. You were ever so much work to drag inside.
He laughed, then grimaced. His hand went to his side as he fought to catch his breath.
I woke up out there once, and I saw the birds.
He shuddered.
You saved my life. I'm indebted to you.
Nora brushed her hands on her skirts, soothing non-existent wrinkles.
No, I did what anyone would do. You were in need, and so I helped.
You're alone here?
He attempted to look around her parlor, only to give up before much of an appraisal. Nora observed it, even if he could not.
It was a pretty room, but with sparse furnishings, since she'd sold so many of the family's pieces when money got tight. Still, it remained warm and inviting, with rich wallpaper,
a dark wood floor and large windows along the front. She frowned. Her fine house kept her safe from wind and hail, but it had not been enough to save her family's reputation.
I'm sorry it was your land I ended up on.
Don't be. I've not had many guests lately, so in a way you're a welcome surprise. She blinked quickly, fighting off the ache of loneliness that had so often blanketed her since her father's death. It can be quiet out here, and there's always so much work. Nursing you back to health will be a diversion and a reason to work faster. Her engagement ring caught her attention. An odd impulse nearly caused her to tuck her hand away. Instead, she said, I am to be married soon. My home will not be this quiet for long. And on Monday, a few field hands will be stopping by to help. They aren't much for conversation, at least not with me. But I feel less alone when they're here.
Engaged?
His voice grew soft. Was it from his pain or something else? His eyes moved slowly to her hand.
I was in love once. Well, I thought I was at least, but...
He winced again.
Love is a farce.
Oh, I'm not in... I mean, you think it's a farce? Her hand flew to her mouth, shocked by the confession she'd nearly made. She didn't love Jake. Not yet, anyway. But she was grateful for him. I have animals to feed. It's already late. They've been neglected. She spoke fast and frantically, ashamed of her verbal misstep. I think you should rest. If you wake and need something and I'm not here, there's water in the cup beside you, and she cleared her throat. There's a chamber pot if you can manage, and a bowl with a rag and water. And there's soap. There are parts of you that still need cleaning. I won't be long. I know you're weak, so don't overwork yourself.
Nora.
Yes? She flinched at his informal address, but the sincerity in his eyes kept her from making a fuss.
I won't hurt you.
For a long moment, they stared at one another. I believe you. She smiled, knowing that despite the odd circumstances and his massive size, she did believe him. Perhaps it was his injuries and helpless demeanor that evoked her trust. Or was it something else? Something she couldn't pinpoint, but that she could feel. She shrugged and said, I don't think you could if you wanted to. He raised a weak hand and let it fall.
You're right. I'm useless.
You'll be on your feet soon enough. The swiftly setting sun cast long shadows over the room. If she didn't hurry, it would be dark before she was done for the night. I have to go. I have chores, and I left my boots by the creek. Quincy opened his eyes again, wider this time.
Your feet have blood on them.
She reached for the door. It's nothing. Minor scratches. Don't waste your energy worrying about me. Just rest.
I'm going to pay you back, he said before closing his eyes again. Someday I will.
2. Quincy dodged left, then right. He brought his fist up to guard his face. When his opponent moved close enough, he jabbed quickly, then pulled back. His heart beat faster, every muscle tense despite the sickening repulsion that twisted inside his gut. He hated the ring and the rabid onlookers. All around him, drunken men cheered, shouting louder with each jab. It was a spectacle, something to bet on, to jeer at and then forget. To his surprise, he saw her there. He stopped mid-swing. Time stood still as his eyes roamed across Nora King's face, taking in her large blue eyes. They had questions in them, and sadness, as though she were disappointed with what he was doing. Something about the way she looked at him was different from the rest of the crowd. She seemed to truly see him. He wanted to run to her, to look at her face and understand her. But he couldn't. The blows kept coming. A fist hit him square in the jaw. His head jerked left. He staggered and then braced himself for defeat. He cried out, begging them to stop the fight. But the crowd enjoyed his pain. Blow after blow came. He covered his face, trying to protect himself. But he couldn't thwart the punches. Quincy? You're dreaming. I heard you crying out. A voice, her voice, said, rousing him.
I'm sorry, he said, embarrassed and weak. I didn't...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?